What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Will. Your email address is the Everyman Drummer Podcast at yahoo.com. Drop me a DM on my Instagrams or Twitters at The Real Will Geronimo. What's happening out there in the drum world? What's going on, everybody? How y'all doing out there today? Thanks for sticking around if you have. And if you've left, we'll catch you up on the other side. We'll see you later. Few things to talk about today. A couple things that happened over the weekend. We'll talk about practicing outside of your comfort zone and making that uncomfortable zone your new comfort zone. So the other day, looking up, and I decided to spend a little time. It was all thanks to the Todd Zuckerman Methods and Mechanics DVD. He had mentioned something. There was a lot of similarities with me and, you know, him and I on what we grew up playing. He grew up here in Chicago. He's from the town of, I think he's from the north side. Talked about his first gig that he played at, you know, Banquet Hall right across the street from the Rosemont Horizon off of Mannheim Road over there in Rosemont. It's actually, I think it's called the Allstate Arena, or I don't know what it's called now. It's, you know, but the Banquet Hall is still there. Talked about that, and it was like a small gig, a little like wedding gig or something like that he talked about. And the point is that he grew up with, he's got a musician family. They're well known here in Chicago, the Zuckermans. He grew up playing jazz. I grew up playing jazz too. I grew up playing jazz music on a small little 4-piece kit, learning the ways around the kit, listening to a lot of fusion jazz music, and playing around there. And I was watching the DVD over the weekend, and he said that practicing, you know, he'd like to spend more time playing, even though this DVD's a few years old already. He wants to spend more time practicing on the little kit. So I decided I'm gonna practice more on the little kit than on the big kit, and in doing that, so it's like it came out. It was really cool because it's like a lot of people that know my drumming, they know me. I'm known for the big kit. You know, you get the 3 rack toms, the millions of cymbals, double kick, the double bass drum pedal, a couple snare drums and floor toms, whatever. All the little bells and whistles and all that fun stuff. You technically, honest to God, you don't need all of that stuff. The point is, I was practicing on the little kit. I have it set up, 2 ride cymbals and 1 crash, and an 8-inch splash cymbal, inverted mounted on the crash cymbal, the 18-inch crash. So it's this, the drum kit consists of my, it's got my vintage Slingerland Artist snare drum, 5x14. I believe that is a 12-inch tom up top mounted off of the cymbal stand. I do want to put the bass drum mount back on the bass drum just for, you know, for the sake of aggravation and tipping a cymbal over. It's that whole virgin bass drum debate that I've had on another episode here. And I've got a tiny little 14-inch floor tom mounted on another cymbal stand, which I do want to put floor tom legs on too as well. It just makes it easy. You know, this all sound isolation thing I think is all crap. You know, it may change the sound a little if the toms are allowed to resonate freely or swing, but I don't buy that crap anyway. I would rather have them mounted on the bass drum or have a set of floor tom legs, that nesting shit. Yeah, don't get me even started on that. But, and it's got a tiny little 14 by 22 bass drum. So I have my 20 inch pasty 20 ride, my old faithful 502 pasty ride, 20 inch, then an alpha thin 18-inch crash and I believe it's an alpha splash that's inverted upside down on it. And dark, crisp 13-inch hi-hats. Using my Vader Sweet Ride drumsticks. All the heads are Evans. The one on the snare drum is the Evans 56 calfskin. So that's what I was practicing on this weekend. I got a little jingle chain on the 20 series ride. There, it's very raw, very dull. It's got that dry sound, and we talked about that before. I like the dry sounding rides. They just are, not only are they aesthetically pleasing to look at, we all have our own differences on those, but the sound is just very ear pleasing. So anyway, getting back to practicing on the smaller kit. So I was practicing for about a good half hour. Like Todd said, you've got to revisit that. You get the energy flowing. You get the ideas flowing. There's things that I've tried on this drum kit. The ideas just flowed. Wanted to spend more time with it to get out of my comfort zone of playing on the big kit. And that's what it basically was. I got out of that comfort zone to play on the small kit using less and making it sound more. All these ideas that were free-flowing, I should have recorded it. I didn't. We didn't record it. You know, you check out the YouTube page. I'm starting to do these little things called short films. Shout out to my guy at the Drum Attic, Eric, who's inspired me to do the short films. He does a lot of those short films, and it's something to grab somebody's attention. Hey, well, this guy's messing around on you. A lot of guys that are doing that on the Instagrams, too. The Instagrams, there's a lot of guys doing a lot of stuff, and they're not recording it basically like you would, you know, through your whatever soundboard you're using, or if you're going to do the complete sound on there. These guys are sometimes just setting up their camera, and they're just going. And they're the guys that have, we talked about this last week, about the followers on there, promoting your brand, all of that. Brand promotion, getting yourself out there. Nobody else is going to do it for you, you know. You have to be the one that promotes yourself, man. And if you don't want to promote yourself, then don't think that stuff is going to just happen and fall into your lap. You have to do it and put yourself out there. Anyway, getting to practice, a lot of us, how many of us drummers out there, we love practicing on our regular kits. Don't get me wrong, I love it too. But when you step outside of that box and you try something new, you get out of that comfort zone, what happens? You get so many ideas. You start to explore things that you've never tried before. And taking short films and lessons, filming yourself and posting it up there, it's going to be to the point where you're going to look at it and you're going to review. It's like an athlete who reviews video. What am I doing wrong? How's my, you know, my posture, all of this stuff? What is going on here? And you don't even have to set it up and have the mics all set up on the drum kit. Just set up a camera. Set up a camera. Start filming yourself and go from there. I was referring to John Holbrook _ drums on Instagram. If you guys check him out on Instagram, a lot of his stuff is short, quick little videos, short clips on there. And he's just playing around, messing around, you know, with all these different ideas on a little jazz kit. And he's just, you know, things that he's just flying around on. With that, that inspired me along, again, with the Todd Zuckerman comment, we got to spend more time. He said he's like to spend more time playing on this kit because you just get for your ideas. My goal is to spend more time on the smaller kit to get more ideas. Like I said, I was playing a solo. I've never done the cross-sticking thing in between the toms and the bass drum. So if you're playing like a triplet feel, you're inserting the bass drum hits in between the hands and you're cross-sticking. I've never done that before. And I decided, why not? I was going to try it. I don't care how shitty it sounds or whatever. If I like it, it sounds, you know, then fine. Pulled it off for the first time, and it's surprisingly sounded pretty cool. But unfortunately, I didn't record. I hadn't recorded that solo. Now I'm going to make it a point to set the camera up and just record it from there. Just to, because it's, you know, you have a raw sound, such an old sound to it. So practicing out of your comfort zone, I mean, it's a good thing. Start practicing out of the comfort zone and make your not comfort zone your comfort zone, and then break away from that. A lot of things that I've tried to practice. I heard a comment by JoJo Mayer. He said that if you sound good while you're practicing, you're not really practicing, which makes sense. You need to sound like shit or crap to get better, right? It's the only way. Because you're learning. You're, in essence, you're teaching yourself new things. You're learning. Anything else, like with the sports, you're not going to be the greatest pitcher in the world without, you know, going headhunting or having complete loss of control. It's just not going to happen. You got to work at it. That's what the practicing out of our comfort zone gets. You know, if you're gonna try it, like, or even try new things, set up. If you're used to playing on a big kit, and you have the luxury of having another kit set up in the room that you can modify with. I've practiced trying to just play hi-hat, bass drum, and snare drum. Now that's tough. And you see the guys on Instagram, they're just flying on that stuff. It's just crazy. It takes work. You got to push yourself to do that. So practicing out of the comfort zone really helps out a lot. So the whole thing is I'm going to spend more time on this little kit because it's actually a really cool kit. I have the toms tuned up almost like that bop, the really hard, the really, you know, the old jazz sounding ways that the classic guys have played with. The toms are really tight, you know, just sounds really cool. But yeah, let's get more into practicing on the smaller kits and out of your comfort zones. Those are always going to be a good thing to try. So anyway, get out there, people of drum world, of our drum ladies and gentlemen. Practice out of your comfort zones. You'll be surprised with what you come up with. I'll tell you that. I was completely surprised with what I was coming up with. I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was hearing. You got to give yourself that chance. So, interesting article that I see in the drum magazine on the forum up here. This one is something that's been, you know, it's on the website, but it's back from the February 2017 issue. I remember, I may have read this back then, but this comes down to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago. I saw another video by my man, Rick Beato. Links are all going to be in the show tunes. I mean, yeah, in the show notes. Links are all going to be up in there. The other day, Rick Beato actually claimed fair use. He's never done it before because one of his videos, once again, was hit with the copyright crap from demonetization. Now, I'm not seeing any comments from anybody out there who's been doing their YouTube drum covers out there. I told you guys, hit me up on the DMs in my Twitter and Instagram, you know. Hit me up on the Yahoo email, everymandrummerpodcast@yahoo.com. If this has ever happened, we've talked about this before, and it gets really old. You know, some of my stuff has been put back on. It has been put back on to the Instagram. It got pulled from there, and they put it back on. But we're going back to this article. This is back the February 2017 issue of Modern Drummer. I'm sorry, of Drum Magazine. My bad. I'll leave the link in the show notes. In the show notes there for you guys. Check it out. And it says it right here. Legal Beat. Do you need permission to upload a cover song to YouTube? We talked about this already. We're covering stuff. Second paragraph in, covers on YouTube have become a heated topic in the music business in recent months as record labels, publishing companies have started to aggressively enforce their copyrights, leading to an increase in video takedowns and, in some cases, lawsuits. Now, that's just stupid again, in my opinion. We're covering music. We're not asking for any money. We're not getting any money. Rick Beato strictly says that we're not here to steal money from the publishers or the artists that actually made it. You know? Come on. I don't care. He doesn't care. He has such a great channel over there, Rick Beato, about what makes this song great. You know, the one that he was talking about recently, I'll again show, the link is in the show notes. He's talking about what makes music today so boring. He was talking about chords on there. And the chord that he started to play, Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin's publishers, you know, went after him. He actually filed fair use and won. That's great. So, he was able to have that episode put back on. I'm actually bringing it up right now. Like I said, you get a lot of great information from Rick Beato. And to see every other week that he's doing a rant about it doesn't bother me. The people need to know out there. Everybody needs to know. And his fair use, it says it was rejected. I thought he said he got through. And it was basically, the video did get put back up. Why today's music is so boring. That's the video that was taken down. I'll leave the link in the show notes. You guys can watch it. But Rick Beato's, you know, he gets tired of posting those videos about why stuff is getting taken down and why, you know, the legals, the publishing companies are coming at. And in the Modern Drummer article, he poses a question. So how do you post a cover song to YouTube legally? To find the answer, we must understand the two main copyrights in a song. One in the composition, lyrics and music, and one in the sound recording. Okay. So when someone records and releases a song, you are free to do your own cover version of that song by obtaining a mechanical or compulsory license. Then every time your cover version is sold or reproduced, you or your record label must pay the statutory royalty fee for that song, currently 9.1 cents per copy in the United States. Now, this is as of 2017. But a mechanical license is not enough. The original artist holds certain rights in the song under copyright law, including the exclusive right to reproduce, to prepare derivative works, to distribute copies, to publicly perform, and to publicly display the work. Okay? So, YouTube has, and probably some of you guys and girls out there, ladies and gentlemen, have probably seen there's a list of, you know, songs that you can put up there. That's bullshit. What the record companies have to do is realize that we're giving them free promotion. The artists are never notified about this stuff. I told you this one already a couple shows ago about when I told Steve Lukather about it. And he replied back to me and said, hey, we're never told about this stuff. He's like, that's complete bullshit. We don't know anything about it. You know. What they need to do is just, they just need to back off a lot about it. Because if they're going to start doing that, then every cover band in the world is probably going to get shut down. Are they going to have a cover band police? They're going to have a cover police going out there issuing tickets? This is the stupidest thing ever. We're giving the artists free publicity. We're giving the artists, introducing the artists, or introducing fans, new fans, to their music. I'm not going to get tired of these rants either. If it happens again on my YouTube channel or on Instagram, I'm not going to get tired of it, because the more that we talk about this, the more people will post about it. Yeah, it'll get redundant. You know, it's just funny that I pulled up on the drummagazine.com website, the article there, and it's just there. Right there. Trending stories, and it must have been something, must have got out of hand. Because it's trending on their website, Legal Beat. Do you need permission to upload a cover song to YouTube? Strictly, the answer is no. Now, I was in contact with Warren Hewitt, and he was talking about the Harry Fox Agency, which is, you know, it's just a way to get stuff, you get a license that saying that you're allowed to cover it. And that's great, but we don't have, I don't have a lot of followers. And I don't know about you guys and girls out, guys and gals out there. I'm not sure how many followers you guys have on your Twitters or your Instagrams or your YouTubes for this matter. That it would be even, if it would even be, you know, something that you want to pursue after. But the Harry Fox Agency is pretty good, and they'll help you out there. The National Music Publishers Association's NMPA, I've never actually checked that out, but I did check out the HFA, Harry Fox Agency, that was on recommendation by Warren Hewitt, and he was talking about that, to get like some sort of a license so that you could just throw those up on there, onto YouTube. But it does get redundant, it does get old when you get a video taken down, demonetized. I don't care. Again, there's other ways that you can go about to get stuff monetized. It's funny, speaking of cover tunes, music is always an original when you're recording it. Other than that, you're covering it every time you go and play it live. The only time the music is original is when you're recording it in the studio. Most of a lot of us musicians, about 100% of us musicians, once we're recording in the studio, once it's done, we become cover artists because we're covering our own stuff. You're just playing it over and over. Think about that right there. None of our music is original unless it's being recorded in the studio. You guys want to argue with me on that? That's up to you. Yeah, you wrote it, but again, correct me if I'm wrong. The only time that it's going to be original is in the studio when it's being born. And once it's recorded, guess what? You got to play it live. So what are you doing? Essentially, you are covering your own music. That's at the end of that story. So do we need permission to put stuff on YouTube? I think we don't. You guys could check out that article. I'll leave that article up on the in the show notes. We'll go from there. You guys can take it as you wish. Take it as you would. Remember, this information is just out there for everybody. It's just my take on it from my point of view. It's just the It's just stupid to think that people are out there just looking. It's like, don't you have anything else better to do? The answer is strictly no. So, whatever. You need permission to upload a cover song to YouTube. You can kiss my ass on that. Anyway, another trending story that I see on Drum Magazine is Drum Notation Guide. I'm not sure if anybody is, you guys, our drum notation is very, it's very different versus regular notation. Yeah, we use the same ledger and everything. But each one of those lines, it instead of being a musical note, it's a voice on the instrument. So drum, the key to that. I don't know, when it comes to reading drum music, our drum music, I'm just so used to reading the snare patterns. So when I see all the other stuff, I do have to refresh myself on what each one of those are. Because to me, I've taken music theory. Back at college, I was a music major in college. So a traditional ledger is what I'm used to reading in the treble clef or the bass clef. So the notes on there, the dotted lines and everything, all that fun stuff on there, quarter notes, eighth notes, whatever. To me, that's a different note. So an F, an A, whatever. When it comes to drumming, it's a completely different thing. We have our own clef, the snare clef with the two lines off to the side. And then you have your key signature, which is the same across music. And then your quarter notes, all those still hold same value. But once you start placing them on the ledger in different lines, it's a different voice on there. So I'm just you. So I want to get your thoughts on that. Hit me up in the DMs and see what you guys are talking about there. If it came easy to you, great. If it didn't come easy, that's even better, because I was the same way. It took me some time to learn the different lines on there, because again, I was used to music on the ledgers as it was, not used for drum notation. It's always when I'm trying to drum notate something, it's very hard for me to drum unless especially for the entire set. I'm good at notating it for the snare drum. We all are. It's just tougher when you start to add the different voices, or you want to actually notate an entire drum part. That's a little bit tougher for me. I've always taken a way that I've learned new songs and when I'm playing in bands or in a studio. Always, I like to take a look at the lead sheet of the bass player, see what he's playing, his rhythms, and going from there. And I notate my drum part from there. And my notate, it's probably different from everybody. My notation is going to be completely different from yours. Yours is going to be completely different from mine. I break down the sections according to band names. I learned that from Mike Portnoy and when he was in Dream Theater, or when Dream Theater was around, whichever way you guys want to look at it there. Portnoy Army Forever, hashtag that. I am the charter member, or I like to think I am. My notation is going to be completely different. I use song names as references to what sections are coming up. That's how it helped me get through there. So that's trending up here on the Drum Magazine website. And I think this is from the article. When this article first came out, if it's an excerpt. I remember seeing this one too. And it doesn't say. It does not say. Ooh, a related post to that. Preaching the paradiddle, my favorite. How many out there love the paradiddle? I love the paradiddle. The paradiddle, one of the best rudiments out there. I can't live without the paradiddle. It's my drug, the paradiddle. So preaching the paradiddle on Drum Magazine, this one's pretty cool. I spend about a lot of my practice time on the pad. Happens to do with playing the paradiddle. The hardest part is trying to accent which note you want to accent, which hit you want to accent. And a lot of people want to accent the one. Mix it up a little and accent like the three. You'll be surprised with how that sounds. It's just take it slow. The paradiddle, when I first learned the paradiddle, it was the greatest thing in the world. You know, now you start off slow and build up the speed and then reverse it, slow down. What I find myself doing lately is practicing the paradiddle with the bass drums. That's the skill you need to learn there. It's a tough one. But paradiddle's my favorite one out there. You know, look at this thing right here. Peggy Sue Paradiddle. I think we all know this. This is that classic song, I think. That's the, let's see, Buddy Holly's, yeah. Buddy Holly's song. And if you actually watch the little video that when he was playing live, was that Ed Sullivan he was playing live on? You see the drummer playing the paradiddles on the tom-toms. You know by the sticking that he's playing a paradiddle on there. It's like, again, paradiddles are just, in my opinion, this is a biased opinion because I love paradiddles. They're the greatest rudiment. If you don't know the rudiment of the paradiddle, you probably shouldn't be playing the drums. Just saying. You can know all your rat-a-ma-cues or triple-ma-cues or whatever the hell they're called. You know, I always stick to the basic three. Single stroke, double strokes, paradiddle. Those are the major three, at least in my opinion. Throwing for good measure in there, the triplet roll. But if you don't know the basic three, then there's something wrong. I don't care about a rat-a-ma-cue or that drag or this drag or whatever that is over there. Those are fine. Unless you're a marching drummer, I don't see anywhere where you could. I mean, if you probably can, I'm not going to say you can't, but a lot of the field drummers, the marching drummers, yeah, they're used to all those rudiments because they're playing out there in a marching band, and, you know, it sounds really cool. I can't do a lot of those other rudiments, so that's maybe why I don't really care to practice them, or I can't figure out a way to use them in what I'm playing. Sure, if I spend some time, again, this goes back to what we were talking about before, right? Getting out of that comfort zone. I probably should spend some time on there. Just, you know. But that's just my opinion. Those are the three right there. You got to know how to do the paradiddle. You just got to do it, man. You got to do it. Look at this variation right here. This is Stone Temple Pilots' Vaseline. I guess it's the whole song is a paradiddle, according to this. Eric Kretz. Looking at the example 7, example 6, and it's Vaseline by Stone Temple Pilots, and I'm looking at the notation on here. Never really realized that it is a paradiddle. I'm gonna have to go back and listen to it now. Check it out. Once you start finding all this stuff, Opeth's got one here too. The Devil's Orchard of double paradiddles. Woo. Now we're getting crazy over there. You got double paradiddles, triple paradiddles. Shit. Watching Jeff Picaro's video and Mashunga basically is like a paradiddle diddle. He's what he called it. And you learn to play that properly. You play Mashunga on the toms. And yeah, the sticking, it is a paradiddle, all right. You just gotta pay attention to it. Because you're actually, it's a paradiddle with all limbs. And when you play it properly, that's how you get the sound from, everybody knows the tom-tom. But the whole song is based around that tom-tom melody. Check that article out on the paradiddle. Right there. Right, it's awesome. Awesome title right there. Preach the paradiddle. How about that? Preaching the paradiddle. The next time you walk into a library, assuming you do, take a moment to stop dead in your tracks. Stand there right in the middle of the place. Look around and think about all the books. The fiction novels, the nonfiction, history, science, and reference materials. Then think about this. Almost 100% of those thousands of books containing untold numbers of words expressing countless facts, opinions, and stories are all created using just the 26 letters of the alphabet. It's really rather amazing. Now think about all the great drummers you've heard playing everything from rock to jazz to hip-hop to metal. Ponder all the difference between them. All the drumming is created using only 5 basic elements. Kind of like the alphabet for drums. These basic elements are single strokes, double strokes, accents, flams, and buzz strokes. And to take this analogy even further, just as there are some letters like vowels that get used more than, say, X, Y, and Z, it is true that the bulk of what we play on the drums is created using only three of these basic drumming elements. These are single strokes, double strokes, and accents. See? The three. I didn't talk about the accents. I think I kind of did on entering the paradiddle and mixing that accent on the one or the three or whatever you want to do it. Enter the paradiddle, one of the 40 internationally recognized drum rudiments. Right? It says it right there. One of the 40 internationally recognized drum rudiments. Like I said, one of the rudiments that you have to practice it. It's the first thing I do when I'm testing out a drumstick at the store. Well, when Vic's Drum Shop in Chicago was open to the public, when we used to be able to go in there, he had this table that was made out of drum pad material, an entire tabletop. First thing I would do, testing out a new drumstick, you know, just the feel for something. Paradiddles came out. It's so natural that the paradiddle comes out of me when I'm doing rolls on the drumstick. So, yeah, preaching the paradiddle. Gotta do it, man. Gotta do it. Check it out. Let's see what else is going on over here in Modern Drummer Magazine. On their website, Dave Weckl, we talked about this the last time, Weckl's on the cover again. He's been on it like a million times already. But it's Dave Weckl. Let's see what he's talking about right here. Let's see if he's done anything different with his kit. That's one of the things I like to go through at Modern Drummer, how it has the pictograms or the infogram or whatever it is with the pictures of the drum set, and then it has everything numbered out there. Let's see if he did anything different with his drum set. His drum set has an evolution on there. It changes to whatever. It doesn't have a picture of it. From what I can see, it's still the two rack toms up top. Got the ride, 2 crashes off to the left. He's got the 12-inch splash with the inverted 8 on there, 14-inch hi-hats. It's a 20-inch ride. I think he's playing a 20-inch ride. I've always known him to play a 20-inch ride on there. He's got his stacks over there. Looks like a 16-inch China on top of an 18-inch crash, and then another. He's got an ozone crash, which an ozone crash is actually pretty cool. I'm actually thinking about getting one. Paisley offers the Swiss crash. You guys ever used it more? It's got like a trashy sound to it when you hit it. I wouldn't consider bashing it because you might break it. They're a lot thinner than the normal ones. Let's see what else they got here. Good overhead shot of it. It's got 2 rack toms, got a floor tom, both on the left and right, and then a snare drum just to the, would be like his last floor tom over there. Let's see what else they got in here. What else they got in this? Tony Williams is featured on this one. The great Tony Williams is also featured in this issue. How many people have listened to him lately? I'm wondering if anybody has. I've been spending a little bit of time listening to a lot of his stuff. And just the power of him, You know, you could hear the when, and then you go back, you listen to Steve Smith, and you just hear the influence on there, that open sound that Tony had when he played. Sort of like it's an awesome sound, just fantastic. So check those out on articles there. I'll leave the link for the drum magazine articles in there for the paradiddle, preaching the paradiddle, and the legalities for the YouTube shit. So I'll put all the links will be in the show notes. You guys want to do a quick favor and check out anchor.fm for you guys have a podcast of anything you guys want to talk about. You guys want to start up your own podcast. Anchor.fm makes it easy for you. Check them out. Anchor.fm. You record it. They do the work. They distribute it for you. Some of the other podcast elements, you have to go out there and get the distribute. You get to submit it for distribution. You know, this podcast is reached easily on, I think, 5 or 6 platforms. I mean, it's getting a lot of attention. It's getting reached out, and Pocket Cast is one of the ones that I use. So check them out. Again, anchor.fm, the easiest way to start your own show up. You record it, they do some of the legwork out there. You still got to put the time in to do the legwork to get your show out there. But yeah, check it out right over there. Again, all the links are up in the show notes. You guys want to check those out. Shout outs to my boy Eric at the Drum Attic. His link will be in the show notes. Check out John Holbrook _ drums at John Holbrook _ drums on Instagram. It's another one. Check out the article Preaching the Paradiddle. You can't live without it. And the link to Rick Beato's I Finally Claimed Fair Use will be in the show notes as well. So everybody, keep on drumming, keep on practicing. Practice out of your comfort zone. Trust me, it'll be refreshing when you do that, when you try that out. Till next time, we'll see you guys later. Be careful out there. Remember to do your part. If you're not vaccinated, get vaccinated. And wear the mask if you're required to. Stop the spread. Let's get back out there playing gigs. Let's get out there doing drum shows, clinics, all the above. Until then, we will talk to you soon. Everybody, be good. Keep on drumming. And we'll see you later.